Welcome to the Year Late Podcast, episode number 29. Today we speak to the very funny Doogie Horner, who's got a upcoming CD taping happening at the Helium Comedy Club here in Philly. It's at 8 p.m. Wednesday, November 18th. That's this Wednesday on 2031 Sansom Street. I think tickets are still available, and you should definitely get out to see this guy. He's one of the funniest dudes I've ever seen, and you're definitely in for a treat.
He's got some books available, too. If you go to his website, doogiehorner.com, and click on the book section, he has some very interesting cats perhaps you weren't aware of. 100 Ghosts and Everything Explained through Flowcharts. And he's a very good illustrator, too. He's got some cool designs on here, and he drew some kids' books. I think one's called Kid Athletes, and he's got Kid Presidents. So he draws presidents as their children. I think he talks about it.
We touch on it in the episode. If you need help spelling Doogie Horner, it's in the episode description. but if you don't know how to read, but you're still going to type it in, it's DoogieHorner .com. That's DoogieHorner.com. We talked to him a lot about, you know, his upcoming special. He's been doing comedy a long time, so we chat with him about that, about the New York comedy scene, about going to school in Philly at UArts, and about his family life. He's got a baby on the way. He's a great guy, and it's a good interview. So I hope you guys really check this one out, and I hope you can make it to the show on Wednesday.
Yeah, and you have anything coming up?
Anything coming up? Thursday I'll be at the American Sardines Bar in Philly. That show is at 8 o'clock, I think, with the Sardines and improv group Nicole Yates and a few other improv groups, too. It's going to be a good show. And then on Saturday, I'll be at the new Cumberland Players Theater in Cumberland, New Jersey.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And you, my good man?
I have a whole lot of nothing.
What's going on, man? Are you okay?
Yeah. actually, I don't have access to the calendar, so I have to look at it. I have to talk to some of the guys and get an update on it, because I only know we have one show.
Oh, okay.
But we did that already.
Was that the Tom and Jerry's
one? Tom and Jerry's on the 13th, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good time.
That's good. Liar.
No, I have fun. I always have fun.
If you can, go see Doogie this Wednesday for a CD taping. It's going to be a great show. If you don't go, you're definitely going to miss out on something really special.
Yeah.
And that's at Helium Comedy Club. 8 p.m. Make it out.
Yep. And enjoy.
Laughcast.com presents.
Yeah, like I said, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, man.
Sure thing.
I guess, are you getting ready for the special? Are you doing shows, like, every night right now, doing, like, your full hour, or?
I ran the hour a couple weeks ago for the first time in, like, the form I plan on doing it for the album.
Mm-hmm.
And it went well. Right now, though, I mean, since I'm in New York, I can't really, there aren't many places where you can do an hour, so I'm just doing 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there.
Yeah.
And trying to work on polishing stuff up. And, you know, I have some jokes that, like, certain parts of them I feel like aren't as good as they could be, so I'm going back and fixing up some old jokes, too. Like, jokes that there are some jokes that I don't tell too often anymore, but I tell them when I do an hour, and so I'm going back to those now and figuring out how I can rewrite them to fit my current style better, because also my style has changed a little bit in the past year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you, like, extending your jokes, or, like, what do you mean when you say your style changed?
I think I'm a little bit looser and a little bit more conversational, and I'm less of a character. Before on stage, I used to have more. When I started out doing one-liners, and when you do one-liners, I think it's helpful to have kind of an unusual delivery, mm-hmm. because the things you're saying are weird. So if you say them in a normal tone of voice, you just come across as some kind of weirdo. But if you say them with, it's kind of like a character, they're, I don't know, funnier for some reason. Like if you think a lot of one-liner guys, they just talk in a weird way. They have an unusual delivery style, like Anthony Jeselnik, Mitch Hedberg.
Dangerfield. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of one-liner guys are Dimitri Martin.
Yeah.
You know, Nick Thune.
Stephen Wright.
So anyway, so, yeah, so that's how I started. And then I moved away from one-liners. And so I think the biggest part of my evolution has just been being a little more conversational. But then also I've been, I used to think it was really hacky to perform at all. Like, I didn't like... how you know they're like some comedians where their material is really weak,
yeah,
but they're a funny person, and mm-hmm. the audience is cracking up, but as a comedian you're like, there's no material here. And yeah. So I used to really resent those guys. So when I started, I said, I'm not going to perform at all. I'm not going to lie to the audience and pretend, oh, I just thought of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be really deadpan. But now I've sort of realized, well, it's okay to perform as long as you have good material. So I've recently been influenced by people like Todd Glass and Brian Regan, who, I mean, really perform, really it up and just go insane. But I'm like, they're not hacks,
no.
Right? So they're allowed to do it. So I've been getting a little bit more... emotional on stage and varying my volume and my tone more also. So those have been the biggest changes.
Do you think your influences have changed over the years, like since you started comedy or?
Yeah, a little bit. Like I said, just embracing comedians like Todd Glass, Brian Regan,
yeah,
is the biggest change. I used to be more into Patton Oswalt.
Okay.
And his jokes are really conceptual. You know, they're about sort of like an idea. But I've abandoned that a little bit since then.
Do you how long have you been doing comedy, if you don't mind me asking you?
I'm not sure. I think it's been about 9 years. I don't count. I know some people, I have some friends, they can tell you how many shows they've done,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that would make me depressed or something. I don't know. I don't like, you know, counting things in that way. And I don't think I could if I want to. A lot of times I don't know what day it is or what year it is.
Yeah.
It's, so, but I was talking to Joey Doherty recently, and he and I started about the same time, and so we figured it out that way. I think it's been about 9 years.
Oh, wow, okay. Do you remember the first joke you wrote still, or no?
Yeah, I said, well, I remember the first joke I told, which is probably close to the first joke I wrote, which was, yeah, the first joke I told, I said, are there any optimists in the crowd? And... like a couple of people said, like, yes or whatever, and I said, my jokes are going to disappoint you the most.
That's awesome.
Very negative, self-deprecating attitude.
And do you feel like, because you've been doing it 9 years, do you feel like the form has kind of like evolved in that 9 years, or besides you, do you know what I mean? Like the way people interpret mm-hmm. jokes. What do you think about that?
You mean... audiences or comedians?
Yeah,
you said the way people interpret jokes.
Yeah, the way audiences interpret jokes, like the style. I guess that's, I don't know, like preferred. I'm horrible at this interview.
You got me. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm a fraud.
That.
I got that one off Google. No.
I think style has changed. Like what's regarded as. Mainstream comedy has changed a lot. It's a lot. When I started out, I was considered very alternative, and now I'm not anymore. Now I'm alternative for a club comic, but not alternative for an alternative comedian.
Yeah.
It's Tim and Eric were a huge influence on comedy in general. So especially on advertising. You know, advertising is so annoying now.
Yeah.
And their Old Spice commercials kind of started that. And so you see a lot more, yeah, I don't know, I think comedy, mainstream comedy is a little more alternative than it used to be. Although true mainstream comedy, like really big acts, I think are still not very alternative. I mean, there's also a difference, though, because I've been in New York for the past 2 years, and New York has different styles of comedy than you see other places, too. New York, a lot of New York comics, it kind of behooves you to, a lot of the crowds here are so bad or so tight mm-hmm. that when you're trying a new joke out, like when you're telling a joke, like let's say you're telling a joke that has multiple funny parts in it, like multiple jokes in it, right? It's like a 3 minute, 5 minute, let's say it's a 5 minute joke mm-hmm. and there are a couple different funny parts in it and you're trying it out. A lot of times the shows where you workshop stuff here in New York aren't particularly good. And so the little jokes that you have in there that aren't like hilarious, but they're like sort of funny, where if you had a really good crowd, you get like a little chuckle, a little laugh that would propel you. When you work with a really bad crowd or a really tight crowd that's like a bunch of tourists. And when I talk about New York crowds, I mean like you get a lot of audiences where it's a bunch of tourists or it's a bunch of hipsters if you're in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Or it's just a bunch of like New York people, which just in general, like sometimes they're really hard to make them laugh just because the attitude here in New York, I think it's a stressful city and you go to a comedy show, but there's a million other things you could be doing. And you see so much incredible comedy anyways. You're like, I saw Dave Attell last night, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
So anyways, when you're workshopping your jokes here, I think what happens a lot of times is you start out with a 5 minute joke and there's all these little jokes in there that are like pretty funny, but they get nothing. They would get little laughs with a really good crowd, but they get nothing with these bad crowds. So you cut them out and what you're left with is just the best part of the joke, but then it's a really short joke.
Like 30 like, seconds.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's a 1 minute joke. You like there's a lot of comedians here in New York that your set is a series of 1.5 to 2 minute, 1 minute jokes, you know, and like the jokes are all like really funny. They're like home run jokes, but I kind of like when you're watching somebody do a longer set and they're telling a longer story and they got a couple little jokes and like this joke is a line drive that gets you on first base and then this joke gets you to third base and then your final joke is the big home run just so the pacing varies a little bit more.
Yeah.
But a lot of New York comedians, it's like they're very funny, but it's like very relentless, and the pace is pretty quick, and it's a lot of like shorter jokes, and it's just like bam, 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 and there's none of those like little subtle jokes that you would hear maybe from a West Coast comedian.
Gotcha.
Right.
Now, do you
think, or someone that's allowed to develop in a city where people are more laid back?
Now, because were you born and raised in Philly, or did you move to Philly and then start comedy here, there, or?
I was born in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is a little town.
Yeah.
And grew up in the suburbs there, but then we moved to the country, Kleckner'sville, Pennsylvania, at the foot of the Blue Mountains.
Okay.
Oh, wow. And around the country. And then I went to college in Philly. I went to art school, the Tyler School of Art. And then I stayed in Philly after that. So I was in Philadelphia for 15 years.
What did you study?
From college on. I studied, my major was graphic design, but I took a lot of courses. I studied painting and an art history minor also. So I did a lot of, maybe I think a little bit more painting and drawing than some other designers.
Oh, awesome.
Is that something like that just is crazy, because I've seen some of your work your illustrations and stuff. Like, I know you wrote a book. How do you find time? Like, this is such a stupid, like, radio question. Like, but seriously, how do you find time to, like, write these great jokes, be an awesome stand-up, and then, you know, do this stuff too? Like, do the graphic design and the art?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm a super hard worker. I feel like I'm actually pretty lazy. Like, I wish I worked more. I don't watch TV too much. I read a lot. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the nice thing about comedy is you can work on it whenever. You don't have to be sitting down.
Yeah.
By yourself. Like, you can think about jokes on the subway. You can, when you're in line somewhere, just anytime you're bored, you can work on it, which is why I really like it. I mean, I started by doing art before I did comedy. What I didn't like about it was that it's so solitary.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started doing stand-up because you can, it gets you out of the house and you can meet people. And then also it's nice, you can just keep it all in your head. Like, you don't have to necessarily even write anything down.
Yeah.
So it's just, I mean, you just kind of think of it. That's what's nice about it. You can just think about it whenever you want, whenever you're bored.
When you said that you got started here in Philly doing comedy, you said the New York crowds are a lot tighter. Is it that?
Yeah.
Is it like, in terms of open mics and stuff, are you still hitting open mics at your level? I don't know. Like, I'm actually asking that question.
Here in New York, I don't do too many open mics because they're so bad.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, how could you really, like, develop anything if you're getting discouraged every time you're trying something new, you know?
I mean, a lot of people do it here.
Yeah.
Partially because you don't have any other choice. But then I know a lot of people say, well, it's better to do a bad open mic. It's better to do a bad show than no show. They're like, oh, you're still getting time in. You're still practicing. And I guess that's true for them, but I can't do too many bad shows. I think it hurts my comedy, but I know a lot of people disagree with that. They're like, well, it's better than nothing, but I disagree with that.
When you say your comedy, do you mean like your confidence in how you tell the joke, or do you mean like just your comedy?
I mean, actually your comedy, because you'll change the way you perform to try to get laughs from, if you're always doing these like bad open mics,
yeah,
you still want to make people laugh. And so you're going to change the way you perform. You're going to change the way you write to try to make that crowd laugh. And then maybe you will. But then once you get in front of a real audience, that's so different. Like, real audiences are so different. I've seen some people that, you know, really crush in front of a room of comedians. But then when they get in front of a room full of people, it's different. So that's part of it, but then also I just personally, I'm like, I just can't do too many bad shows. I would just get too depressed. But I mean, I'm not above doing open mics if it's a good open mic. Like in Philly,
yeah,
I do open mics all the time because they're great, or they're at least okay, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'll take you to some that are okay. they used to have some mics. I live in Delco. There were some mics around here that were pretty awful.
There still are.
actually, most of them are closed down now. But
it's weird. We sometimes we make them worse. You know, I mean, it's like,
yeah,
they don't have to be as awful as they are, but like collectively,
yeah,
all the people participating, sometimes we make it even worse than it has to be.
Yeah.
I don't know, because there used to be some really bad open mics I would do in Philly. Like Sour Grapes was this one mic that,
yeah,
Danny Ozark ran.
Mm-hmm.
That was so terrible, but it was so terrible, it was funny.
Yeah.
And we didn't mind that it was terrible. I think, you know, like low expectations is the key to happiness. And, you know, we're all just like horrible comedians in Philadelphia. None of us had any expectations about our comedy careers, and so we didn't care that it sucked and that nobody was there.
They embraced it, right?
But that's part of what's makes the open mics in New York so bad. It's like almost everybody at that shitty open mic was the best comedian in their town. And in New York, it's like you actually can have a career. You know, you can actually get discovered or whatever. So you're at this horrible open mic, but you actually have like high expectations.
Yeah.
As opposed to in Philly, it's like you had a horrible open mic, but you're just like, well,
you get
that's
to...
all there is yeah, in town, yeah. So it's fine.
Do you, you know, I think I, this is an observation I feel like I got from open mics, is that when you're at open mics and you're in front of other comics, like, they like, it seems like they like darker material. And that
yeah.
definitely doesn't translate in front of, like, a real crowd.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that a comedian laughs at is usually not the same as, like, what you know, when you're watching a show, the jokes that the comedians laugh at a lot of times are not the jokes that the audience laughs at.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You
but
said,
that's, yeah.
You said you like to read a lot in your spare time. Do you have a
mm-hmm.
you have a favorite book or a favorite author?
I mean, the author I read the most of is Stephen King.
Okay.
But that's partially just because he has so many books. He's so prolific.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He's got so much to choose from. I read all of Michael Crichton's books. I read a lot of Dan Simmons. A lot of Stephen King.
Yeah.
Right now I'm reading Joe Hill's book, Nosferatu. That's Stephen King's son. It's pretty good. I just read Anathem, which is this speculative fiction book about these monks by Neal Stephenson. I don't read a lot of horror aside from Stephen King necessarily. Read a lot of detective novels. I don't know. I mean, I guess I have like guy taste.
Yeah.
And I don't read much literature necessarily, but I like well-written books. But I like sort of like low culture, semi-genre books, but that are well written, which is hard to find. But like Scott Smith, A Simple Plan would be a good example, or Dan Simmons.
Okay. Have you read Stephen King's On Writing?
I've read that like 10 times.
Yeah. I know he talks about that in that book about kind of like setting up a routine of like a writing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have anything like that for you? Like, do you wake up in the morning and you set aside time to write jokes or anything like that?
No. No. I mean, I work every day on different stuff, either like design or drawing or writing. But I just kind of work on whatever needs to be done that day, and I switch it around. And I don't necessarily write comedy every day. I do probably most days.
Yeah.
But, I just kind of work every day a little bit.
That's
just kind of at different times.
Like, when you first started with comedy, were you like obsessing over it to the point where you couldn't even function anymore? This is me projecting right now.
Where I couldn't function in what respect?
As a normal citizen, like all you thought about, and like me right now, all I'll ever do is just like watch. I watch a lot of comedy specials, like,
uh-huh.
And then I have like 400 ideas, not even premises, just like ideas
uh-huh.
of premises, and I'll just try to flesh them out, and I really force it. And in the end, I get nothing, and then my brain's exhausted all the time. So maybe it's just not for me. But but
sounds like it's absolutely for you.
But so I wasn't sure if like you had that kind of feeling earlier on, and then like you've learned how to like put it in its place so it doesn't like destroy you and run you dry. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I don't watch a ton of comedy. I like comedy, but I don't really watch a ton of comedy, or listen to a ton of comedy. I think about jokes a lot and I write them, you know, like I have black moleskin notebooks and
yeah,
I write jokes in those. And then I have my phone, which I do audio recordings on if I come up with ideas, and little 3x5 cards and stuff. I guess I'm not a very like tortured I don't know. Yeah, some people like, I think I'm pretty like untortured for a
Yeah.
comedian. I know a lot of people are just like, oh, yeah, like you said, it's consuming my, I can't function and whatever. I'm like, oh,
Yeah.
I guess I'm not a very good comedian because I don't, it doesn't consume my life. I just write jokes and then tell jokes and then we're done. I mean, I think about comedy a lot, but it's just a fun thing to do. It's like you need something to do, you
Yeah.
know what I mean? Because there's a lot of times in your life when you're just sitting there or you're doing boring stuff and you got nothing to think about, and that's what comedy is great for. You can just sort of think about jokes and work on them.
Have you ever had a crowd that was like too out of control for you to handle or anything like that? Like any weird, like crazy audiences that you want to talk about?
Hostile moments.
Like we
What'd you say?
like okay, I said is have you
No,
ever
what'd the other guy
I said
say? He
like
said something moments.
hostile moments.
Oh yeah, lots. Well, I mean, there was what on America's Got Talent. I mean, that was probably the craziest hostile crowd I ever had.
That was insane.
Yeah.
But I didn't. A lot of people were like, oh, you must have been so scared. I was not scared at all.
No, yeah, you went right at him, yeah.
Well, fuck them.
Yeah,
Like,
sure, absolutely.
who are they? They're a bunch of. I mean, that's the whole thing about comedy. Everybody's like, oh, I would be so scared because what if the people, those people don't like you in the audience? But they're strangers.
Sure.
Who are these people? You're never going to see them again. I only get nervous if somebody's watching whose opinion I actually respect, you know? So if there's some comedians there that I respect a lot that I don't know if they're going to like me, I'll get nervous. Or if it's a friend of mine or family member, I'll get nervous. But if it's just a bunch of strangers and they don't think you're funny, I mean, that's not good, but
Yeah,
who
but
cares?
what's
Like,
not the end of the world, sure.
you're never going to see him again.
Yeah.
And especially with that show, America's Got Talent, I never watched that show. I don't really watch any I don't watch any reality shows. I don't really watch any network TV. I had no clue what I don't respect that whole sphere of culture. And so, like, just a bunch of people booing at me for no good reason.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
And it seemed like the video, like it didn't even give you a chance. It was just. It's
Yeah.
like
They did
as soon as you
not.
started, they just were like, "Nope, you're out."
Well, but that's sort of the thing. I mean, they had been there for hours. I mean, I think the show had been,
Oh,
I think
really?
the show they were watching. Yeah, I mean, they had watched, like, I was the second to last person of the entire night.
Oh
So
my
the audience
God.
had already been there for like 4 hours, 5 hours. So it's kind of in their best interest to, if they don't like you, to
Yeah,
get rid of you as quick as
get
possible
you
so they
out of there
can
as
go
fast, yeah.
home. So, yeah, I don't think they're, and also I came up on stage very negative. My opener was that opener, like, with any optimist in the crowd, I'm going to disappoint you the most. So of course they're like, I go up on stage and I'm like, I'm a bad comedian.
Right.
That's the first thing.
Yeah.
I am not good. They're like, boo, good,
Yeah.
leave. You're wasting our time.
This guy's gonna make us
Then
sad.
leave.
What do you think's been better for your career? Americans Got Talent or work with Doug Benson? I've seen that you've been on his podcast quite a few times. Yeah.
I didn't get much out of America's Got Talent, but I sort of did, I didn't really try to. At that time, I still had a full-time job at Quirk Books in Philadelphia, and I really liked my job.
Okay.
And everybody was like, "Oh, you should quit your job and just do stand up full time, or you should move to New York now or Los Angeles or whatever the, you know."
Right.
But I was like, well, I mean, at that time, I had only been doing stand-up, I think, 4 years, because I think it was about 5 years ago now. And so I wasn't good enough to headline. I had the time, but it was not, I knew I wasn't particularly good. And I didn't want to do, like, what else was I going to do? Like, nobody called me up and was like, we want to give you a sitcom.
Right.
And also, at that time, America's Got Talent wasn't really known for having good comedians on it. Like,
Yeah, there's a lot of big
I talked
shows.
to some people at Comedy Central, and they're like, "Oh, you were, oh, I never watched that show." Like, if I had done 5 minutes on Conan, that would have been a bigger feather in my cap to the people that actually care about stand-up, even though way less people watch Conan than watch America's Got Talent.
Sure.
But
there's more respect
so,
being on Conan than there is being on a show that's almost like a novelty like that.
Yeah. So, and it was a combination also of, yeah, like I just kind of didn't care. Like, I was like, I have a job I like. I love, you know, working for Quirk, and I didn't want to quit just so I could go do what? Like more reality TV? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Also, you think it's a big deal, but you come to New York and it's like, yeah, everybody's been on TV, or like lots of people
right.
have. You know, you people are like, yeah, I have an HBO special. You know, it seems like a big deal, and it is, but it's not a big deal in an industry where it's like, well, yeah, you're supposed to be on TV. You know,
right?
And then also, like I said, I didn't really embrace it. I wasn't on Twitter at the time. I wasn't like really on social media anywhere, and I just didn't really care about exploiting it, or I didn't really care about being famous.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was famous. Like, I got recognized everywhere I went. Just walking down the street, sitting in restaurants, I was constantly people coming up to me. It was crazy. It was
really?
It was actually a little, yeah, it was a little
what would they say
stressful.
To you?
They'd say, oh my God, you're on America's Got Talent. You're hilarious. Can I... Yeah.
Can I buy your meal?
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I guess it's supposed to be. Yeah, it's, I guess it's great. I mean, that's I'm a comedian. I'm supposed to want to be. That's what I'm supposed to want. But it was. I don't know. I found that a little upsetting.
Do you like with now? What's the like? You've been doing stuff with Doug Benson a lot. Like I know you're like a frequent guest. Has that really helped your career? Or at all, like with getting followers or other recognition, or
I don't know. A lot of people mention it to me. A lot of people say they heard me on the show, and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it helped. I mean, I guess it helped people know me. I don't know.
Okay,
beats me.
Yeah. Now, you have a baby on the way, right?
Yeah, December 23rd.
Oh my gosh, that's so soon.
Mm-hmm.
Are you excited? Do you guys know the? Well, obviously you're excited. That's a dumb question.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you guys like know the? Are you finding out the sex beforehand or?
Yeah, it's a boy.
Oh, that's great. You guys got a name picked out and everything?
We do, Kirby.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Jen's. It's her grandfather's name.
That's awesome.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Now, how is the stress of trying to do a taping and be a father all coming together? Like, are you holding it together or?
Yeah, everything is going good. I was stressed out for a little bit there because I wasn't sure what label to go with, and I wasn't sure whether to do two shows or one show.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple other things, and I hadn't yet run the hour in its new form yet, but I took care of all those things, and then so the recording is pretty well in hand. I have like one or two things I need to take care of, but most of those things are good. And then as far as the baby, I mean, we got a pretty small apartment here in New York, but it's not too bad. I think for New York, we have a relatively large apartment. So we just bought a shit ton of furniture at IKEA to like new shelving and cabinets so that we can put all our stuff away, and then we got rid of some furniture and we made some room for the baby in the in our living room. So I think we're in pretty good shape. So yeah, I was pretty stressed out because the book, I had a bunch of stuff going on. The cat's book just came out.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting ready for the recording, getting ready for the baby. Was doing some other stuff, but everything's in pretty good shape now. I don't have too much stuff. I mean, I got the recording. I got to give a book talk in Philly on Saturday about a book I illustrated called Kid Athletes.
Okay.
So I got to get ready for that.
Is that for like a book of, or is that for like a group of people who are in like the book business, or is this just an open to the public talk for like?
It's open to the public. It's part of the First Person Arts Festival.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
So I've given book talks before. I've illustrated a couple kids' books. Kid Presidents and Kid Athletes are the two kids' books that I did, and they're true stories about famous athletes, but when they were kids, or you know, presidents, but when they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
They have a ton of illustrations. Each book has 200 illustrations, and I'm working on the third book in the series right now, Kid Artists. Which is way more depressing than Kid Presidents and Kid Athletes, because half the people I'm drawing died in either like a drunken car crash heroin, or they committed suicide, you know.
Do you follow their whole life?
It's just when they're kids.
Okay, so good.
It's just like, it's young Basquiat before he starts doing heroin, you know, or it's young Jackson Pollock before he starts drinking.
You know, Kurt Cobain with a shotgun in his hand or something.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so I've given talks to those books before at elementary schools.
Okay.
And those, so you're just talking to all kids, and it's a lot of fun. But this talk is going to be, I asked them, because it's part of the First Person Arts Festival, I asked, is this the audience going to be kids or adults? And they said half and half. So it's like, oh, perfect. So half the audience will not like it, is what you're telling me. So. I'm rewriting the talk right now, and I'm so we'll see. I don't know.
Wow, that's crazy. So you have to do that Saturday, and you're writing out a talk for that. So you're not even just like, I guess you shouldn't wing it for that kind of stuff. That's too.
I think a lot of people do, but I always feel bad. I mean, a lot of these book talks, I don't really like. I just gave a book talk for my cat's book. I put so much work into it, and I just did it once at the public library here in Manhattan, which was exciting. I was glad to do it there.
Wow, that's cool.
Actually, I will be giving it again in Philly on December 11th at Brickbat Books.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Where can people find your books if they want to find them? Like Amazon or your website, or
if you go to my website and you click on books, you can see. I just have the three books that I wrote and illustrated on there, which are some very interesting cats, perhaps you weren't aware of, 100 Ghosts and Everything Explained Through Flowcharts.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find them on Amazon. You can find them in bookstores. Some very interesting cats, especially. It'll be the easiest to find in bookstores right now because it just came out.
Okay.
So it's always nice to try to support your local bookstore if you can.
Do you have a favorite bookstore here in Philadelphia that you go to?
Brickbat Books. Yeah. That's my favorite.
I was going to say that's a good one.
Yeah, have you been there?
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah, I love it there.
It's fantastic. Patrick, the guy who owns it, he used to own Big Jar Books. Do you ever go there?
No, I never went there.
It's an old city, maybe like 10 years ago or 8 years ago or something like that. But yeah, Brickbat's really good. They got a lot of face-out display, and it's curated pretty well. Here in New York, there's some good ones. I mean, I go to the Strand a lot, or McNally Jackson. Those are both good.
Okay. I don't know. Okay, you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, it's another personal life question. Like, I guess at this point... you've already nested, like you said, you got the stuff from like IKEA to make room for the baby.
Nested, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's the term, right? Nesting.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah,
yeah. All
right. Yeah, yeah. One of the books Jen read, they're like, you may experience a strong nesting instinct. Warning, you may start collecting twigs and fashioning them into a bed.
I guess one of the questions I have for you is are you a handyman? Are you a guy who like fixes things around the house? No,
I'm so not handy. Jen's handy.
Really?
Yes. She put together all the IKEA furniture we bought.
Oh, wow.
I didn't. I can't stand that stuff. I can't stand like painting a room or putting together furniture or fixing a thing. I hate it. It makes me so angry because. It's the most boring thing in the world. If you do it perfect, if you do it properly, you just get the thing you knew you were going to get.
Yeah.
Like the best case scenario, you don't mess anything up and you get exactly what you knew you were going to have, right? Like you paint a room, you're like, I got to paint this room blue. And it takes all day, and then, great, now it's blue, and I knew it was going to be blue. And so the whole time you're painting it, you're bored out of your mind because there's no surprises. I mean, that's why I like art, because you start with an idea of what you're going to have, but as you're going, you're constantly realizing things. Oh, I could change this, or things emerge, and then the thing you end up with is, you never know what you're going to end up with when you start a piece of art. And that's why I like, you know, writing, drawing, or comedy, they're all the same.
Yeah.
In that respect, where you never know what you're going to get. But so, like, fixing a doorknob, I'm just like, it's broken now. But when I fix it, it won't be broken. And it's just so boring because every minute you're working on that doorknob, you're just wasting your life. It's so boring. I'm embarrassed to say, a lot of times when we have to like paint or clean or something, I get drunk and then do it.
Yeah.
Because I just can't, I'm like,
I see nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I can't stand it.
When you're doing something like fixing a doorknob, do you do that, or do you have Jen do that, or?
Usually Jen will do it because she doesn't mind doing it and she's better at it. So.
Yeah. Like what I'll do, I'll YouTube videos.
Usually she does it.
I'll like if I need to fix something around the house, I'll just like YouTube it and just like try to do that.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
WikiHow. That's it. WikiHow. They have everything on there.
I'm the exact opposite of my dad. He built so many things. He built a deck. He finished the basement. He built a hangar. He built a couple airplanes.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy.
Wait, he built airplanes? Like real airplanes or like model mm-hmm. airplanes?
No, real air, like the kinds you sit in and you would fly. He flew ultralights, which technically are not real airplanes because they're under a certain weight, so you don't have to have a license. But you get in them and you fly. I mean, you can fly across the country. You can fly across the world in one, but they're small, you know?
Are those like gas planes or are they... That's just dumb. I don't know. I'm getting a look. I have no idea what those are. Ultralight, you said?
No, that's a good question. Yeah, they run on gas. Like a typical engine, well, they're four-stroke engines. So you put the gas, you put the oil in the gasoline.
Uh-huh.
It's a four-stroke engine, so like a lawnmower engine. I mean, it's what a lot of people say. They're like, oh, it's like an airplane with a lawnmower engine, but I mean they're not.
That's
frightening. Bigger than that.
Yeah,
they're bigger than that. I mean it's like 320 horsepower, maybe, or the 309. He had a 309. But yeah, and they're made of usually hollow aluminum tubes, and then you stretch Dacron fabric over them, or you can do cotton, and then you put stuff on it, and you fly around. I think you're not supposed to go above 1,500 feet because that's for conventional aircraft.
Right.
And usually you fly around 1,000 feet. And some of them are slow. Some of them go like only like 50 or 60 miles an hour. But then some of them are pretty fast. They can go like 90 miles an hour. And but, I mean, they're open. You can like look. It depends on the airplane. Some have a cockpit around them. But some of the ones we flew, like you can look down between your legs. You can look to the left and the right. And it's just, you know, it's just nothing. There, you just kind of strapped in this little seat, and
so you've been in one of these things up in the sky.
Yeah, we used to fly all the time.
My
dad flew them, and that's why we moved out to the country, because he wanted to have his own airstrip. So he bought 9 acres out in the country and built a house on it, and then our backyard was the airstrip. So we would take off and land right over the house.
That is so cool.
That's my dream.
Yeah, Bubba wants to be a pilot.
I do, yeah.
Oh, man, dude, start flying ultralights. They're great.
I've never even heard of these.
It's way cheaper because airplanes, there's all these, you got to get a license.
40 hours in flight training and all this stuff.
And your plane has to be at a certified airport, which you got to pay for.
Right.
You're not allowed to fix it yourself. You have to pay a mechanic and you have to get it certified.
Oh, geez.
With ultralights, you work on it yourself. Now, the danger of that is, if you do a bad job, you'll die.
Yeah, you're fully accountable.
A lot of people, a lot of my dad's friends did die in airplane crashes. He crashed a couple times. I was in a couple, we had a couple engine outs, and we had to do a couple, I was in a couple emergency landings, and he had to do a couple more.
Oh, my God.
But it's not, if you, you know, if you keep your head, you know, you probably won't die. They're pretty light, so they can glide better than an average airplane. You won't, you won't drop like a rock. You'll drop like a wood, piece of wood, wood.
That's insane.
So it's pretty dangerous, but it's not crazy dangerous, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to have to look into this.
It's great.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
what, do you think that's the craziest thing you've ever done? Or is there something crazier you've done in your life?
I mean, I don't think that's particularly crazy. I'm not a thrill seeker. I don't do anything dangerous. I mean, the most dangerous thing I do is snowboard, but I can't snowboard anymore because I messed my back up. I got a herniated disc I had to have surgery on. So they said, technically, I was like, can I, once I get better, will I be able to snowboard? And they're like, yeah. And I said, will that increase my chance of messing my back up again? And they're like, oh, yeah. I was like, well, I'm not going to do it then.
So you're saying I shouldn't do it.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you can. Will it fuck my back up again? Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. So I don't do anything physically. I'm not very physically adventurous, but like mentally, I try to. That's more my area of interest.
Like when you say mentally, like what does that mean? Like,
well, I think people would consider stand-up comedy adventurous.
Oh, okay.
Like I didn't used to do that.
What made you get started in stand-up? I guess just because you said the thing about art being solitary and
art's so solitary. I mean, I had tried. Well, I went to art school, and I thought I was actually a pretty bad visual artist. And then I tried filmmaking. I made a couple short films, and I liked that a lot. But it takes so much time, and you need to have things like good actors. And it's such a pain in the ass. Like, you shoot a scene, and it's like, well, now I need wardrobe, or like I need to make this kitchen look nice, or right, like you need location scouts or good sound or good actors,
lighting,
and just like all these lighting and just like all these things. And I was just like, so much work for like it bothered me. I tried writing is kind of always been what I've really wanted to do, but I tried writing and I wasn't good. I tried screenwriting. I was okay, I guess. But then screenwriting is like the worst parts of writing and filmmaking. It's like, the nice thing about writing is there's no budget. You can do whatever you want. You don't need any supplies. But then you just write it and then you gotta like show it to people. But with screenwriting, it's like you write it, but then the screenplay isn't even the final thing.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's still gonna make it into a movie. Anyways, I tried a lot of art forms and I wasn't happy, and I was looking for a new way to express myself, and I wanted to get out of the house. So stand-up seemed like a good way to do that.
And how long have you been with Jen since before you started stand-up? Or?
Yeah, we met in college. So we've been together, I think, like 17 years or something.
Wow. Are you guys...
Or no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's awesome. And what's that like, that dynamic? Like, I guess you're past it now where you're going out every night, right? Like you're home like a couple nights a week now, or are you out every night still with comedy?
I don't go out every night. I never really did.
Okay.
Which I know a lot of comedians think is crazy. Like, I know a lot of guys, they like, especially here in New York, they're like, oh, I like doing 3 shows a night. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't have that much new material. I only kind of need to do, you know, like 5 shows a week is good.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'd do more if I had more to do, but you know, like 3 to 5 shows a week is fine. But yeah, what was your question?
So I was
Jen
gonna,
mind?
Yeah, does she, like, how, yeah, my question was, like, how was she with that when you were, like, first getting started and, you know, because you're gone a lot, and it's kind of like you change a whole dynamic of the relationship that way, I feel.
I mean, nothing really changed, because I was out a lot anyways. Before I did stand-up, I played ping pong. That was my hobby.
Wow.
And so I was out a lot of the nights, a couple nights a week, playing ping pong. Or I would go out with my friends and just,
where would you play?
Hang out. I played at Bob and Barbara's. I played at the Ruba. I played at Tovo, which was this really good Asian place on 4th and Washington. It's not open anymore. And then I played in New Jersey at this church.
Is this is there an underground ping pong scene in Philadelphia that I never knew about?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Our relationship didn't really change. Like, everybody asked that, or everybody's...
Yeah.
Thinks it's... I've heard a lot of comedians say it's really hard to keep a girlfriend because of their stand-up, but I'm like, I don't think it's your stand-up. I think it's you.
Yeah.
And your stand-up is just kind of like... Your stand-up is like a reflection of that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's anything inherently about stand-up itself that makes it hard to keep a relationship, aside from the fact that if you're doing the road a lot, that's hard because you're gone a lot.
Yeah.
Or if you're up at night a lot and your girlfriend has to work in the morning, that's hard. But I was already up at night, all night anyways. Like, I've just always been up. My natural time to go to bed is, 4 a.m.
Jesus.
Oh, wow.
I try to go to bed earlier than that, but that's kind of my natural. Go to bed at 4, sleep until, noon or 1.
Like, still to this day?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was before I did stand-up. I was just always like that. Like, when I was in college, I would just paint all night. And then when I got out of college, I would just stay up all night at Bob and Barbara's or doing whatever. Reading. I'll stay up all night and read.
You don't fall asleep as soon as you start reading? That's what when I try reading at night, I go right out. Like, at nighttime I do, but like in the day, I'm an idiot, right? And a good way to start a sentence. But
no, I've heard a lot of people say that
about me.
that you're an idiot. Yeah.
but I'm a really slow reader. It was only a couple years ago I decided, I really wanted to, start reading. And I started with, all my eighth grade reading lists because I was like, I'll start here and then I'll get smarter. Nope, that's not how it works. Instead, I just, really enjoyed a lot of good books that I missed out on. But it takes me, forever. I don't even want to say it on the podcast. It takes me, an hour to read, sometimes 10 pages to 30 pages, which is...
Well, it's not a race. It's not a race, man.
I know.
Take it at your own pace. You want to read slow? Read slow.
I just read East of Eden by John Steinbeck.
Oh, yeah.
It was
great book.
Are you laughing?
No.
I bring it up all the time.
No,
I know. I'm sorry. I've been reading this book for 4 months, and it's it was so good.
Well, that's a long book.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just wanted somebody who read to know that I read a book. That was very long. I guess I will. We'll end in a second. I'm so bad at this, but the last question I just wanted to ask you about the special coming up at Helium on Wednesday, November 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are sold out, right? Is there a chance that more tickets will become available the night of, or
tickets are sold out?
Oh, I thought you said they were sold out. I thought you said on the old social media that you. They were sold out.
Oh, that's what everybody thought. No, I tweeted. So my Twitter is linked to my Facebook.
Okay.
And I tweeted. I did a show on Thursday at WFMU with Todd Barry.
Oh, okay.
And I tweeted about that. I was like, hey, performing with Todd Barry at WFMU tonight. And I tweeted that. And then I checked their website and they said it was sold out. So then I tweeted, oh, sorry, it's sold out. But for some reason, Twitter didn't. Send my first tweet to Facebook. It just sent the second one.
Gotcha.
So everybody just saw it sold out, and then everybody's like, "What?" And but so no, my show is not sold out.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, not good, but you know what I mean. Good week. So these latecomers can still get tickets.
Out. It is not.
That's great. If it does sell out, will you add a second show?
I don't think so, because we would have to, like crazy sell out. You know what I mean?
I gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like, you'd have to, like, get, like, I mean, maybe, but I think it would have to, like, crazy sell out, and I bet it won't.
Are you doing any Philly radio or anything like that to promote the show?
No. I don't even know any Philly radio. Like, what is there? Like
Preston and Steve, you know? And that's the only one I can really think of. And John
DeBella. Try. Oh, right. I guess I should try, huh?
Yeah, definitely. They could definitely help with that. So you're doing a full hour or 90 minutes or?
It'll probably be around an hour. My friend Luke Cunningham is opening. He's very funny. And then.
He's a Philly guy too, right?
Yeah, he lives in New York now. He wrote for The Tonight Show for a couple of years.
Oh, cool.
And then he just stopped that, and now he's working on some TV pilots and stuff like that. I'll probably do about 60 minutes, I think. And then, I'm just going to kind of do everything, and then we'll trim it down for the album.
That's great. Yeah. Well, we're excited about it. We're definitely going to be there.
Yeah.
Me too. Cool.
Yeah. Doogie, thanks so much for giving us a call, or us calling you and all that kind of stuff and talking about this.
Yeah, man. No problem. Thanks for having me on your show.
All right. And then maybe you'll be on time next time.
Hey.